Good afternoon and welcome to the Ascent Resources conference call. My name is Rosie, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you'll be on listen only. However, at the end of the presentation, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. If you need assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to Colin Hutchinson to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie, and thank you everyone for joining us this evening. The format briefly, I'm going to go through an update, discuss the two RNSs that we had out last week, which went through in a fair degree of detail the current permitting situation in Slovenia, the operational performance of the wells, the progress of the strategic review, and some actions that the board's taking in response to the position we're in. Once I've gone through that update, and hopefully that update will deal with a number of the pre-submitted questions, the call will be opened up and we'll take any further follow-up points that people may have. So the two announcements we put out last week updated shareholders on a number of things, and I think the biggest issue is probably the permitting situation. So to clarify where we are at the minute, Ascent has applied for two permits in Slovenia. One is the IPPC permit, which we need for the processing plant, and the second one is the permit to re-enter and re-stimulate PG10 and PG11A. The meeting that was held last week was predominantly about the first permit, the IPPC permit for the processing plant. And the meeting was a planned meeting, which the head of the British Chamber of Commerce in Slovenia had arranged with officials from the Environment Ministry and from ARSO, a senior official in ARSO and the person that's in charge of our case. The outcome of that meeting was positive. ARSO said that once we've dealt with these final two amendments, one of which is a response that's already well in hand that we'll submit in the next few days, and one is a study which requires third-party input and will take a little bit more time. But once we've submitted those two amendment responses, latest by sort of the first week in September, they'll deal with those as a matter of urgency, and hopefully we'll have a favourable response by the end of September. They did touch on the second permit as well, which is the permit to re-stimulate PG10 and PG11A. It's the permit that I'm most keen to get, really. The permit for the processing plant is necessary for the long-term future of the project, and it's necessary to prove that we can get through the permitting process. But it's the permit to re-enter and re-stimulate PG10 and PG11A is the one that's going to actually increase production, increase revenue. That permit we submitted, the last set of amendments we submitted was in the early part of July, so we were waiting for some more feedback on those. That's been submitted, and once we deal with them, we hope that it'll be dealt with the same urgency that the they've undertaken to deal with the IPPC permit for. So the permitting, it seems reasonably positive now. The announcements last week also dealt with well performance. So briefly, PG11A has been, we've known there's been an issue with PG11A really since March. The well is producing too much water. We've initially thought and been advised by the consultants that the well would clean up after a period of time. That doesn't seem to be the case. The water well is producing formation water. It's possible that we've fracked into a fault zone. It's still producing on a regular basis, but we do have to shut it in to let the pressure build so we can keep the well flowing. PG10's produced a lot better. It's been producing almost constantly since last April, and then export production since November. Its production has begun, the pressure has begun to drop on it, and we need to we need to shut it on a periodic basis now to continue the well flow. Sorry, I should just mention that Clive Carver is also on the call, and he'll be answering some of the points later. The other thing that the announcements last week dealt with was the strategic review. We've had quite a lot of questions submitted on it. We don't have a closed date set for the review, and it wouldn't really be practical to set a date. We are trying to bring it to a conclusion as swiftly as possible, but a very good number of companies express an interest in signed confidentiality agreements. I think we'd over 20 signed. We do have a number of parties that are still involved and still interested. Some have done more work than others. There are some, the permitting issue, I think, is permits are more of an issue for some of the interested parties than others. Some take a more relaxed, longer-term view and believe the permits will come through in due course. For others, the permits arriving would certainly make a big impact on how quickly we can bring that to a conclusion. And the last point that we dealt with in the announcements last week was the actions that the board has taken to try and, in light of sort of the permitting delay, the ongoing strategic review and the well performance. So we've cut costs as much as possible now at PLC. From the beginning of September, I'll take a part-time salary. I will still be focused on my role with Ascent and do whatever is necessary to try and bring the strategic review to a successful conclusion and follow up on the permits and everything else operationally in Slovenia. And by sort of cutting back on costs, we expect that we've given ourselves, we have enough resources to take us into 2018, and that should allow the strategic review to come to a favourable conclusion, we hope. So I think on that point, I might open the call up to our, we're going to deal with some of the other questions that have come through first, and then we'll open it up to questions on the call. So Tim, do you want to highlight any of the questions that I haven't dealt with there?
Has the company considered any legal action against ARSO?
We have considered it. We've talked to lawyers a number of times, particularly in when we got the administrative court decision a couple of years ago, where they clearly said that we'd followed the wrong law on the guidance. On the law had been badly implemented by the Slovenian government, so we consulted lawyers at that point. The advice was we potentially had a case against the Slovenian government, but it wouldn't make us very popular in Slovenia to do that. I think taking legal action would be damaging to the process, so it's best to work with the ARSO, work with the government to try and get things done.
What makes you think that, that these reassurances are any different from previous discussions with ARSO?
I mean, ARSO have been reassuring in the past, that's true. I think this time it's been to a third party and someone who has reasonable importance within the country. And I think we have answered a great deal of amendments about these, about this application in particular. It's taken such a long time that we have to be close to the end of the process. And what they've said is, once we submit these two applications, if we deal with all the points that they've raised in those amendments, then they'll issue it in due course. So I have to believe what they're saying.
Is there enough cash flow for the company to operate for another year?
We've taken the actions to cut costs so that we're still producing a reasonable amount of gas and gas revenues for last month for $160,000. So we've cut costs, and with the cash resources we have in the bank, we recently got €200,000 back from ENA because of the adjustment of the contract there. So we've got cash in the bank, we've got cash coming in, and we've cut our costs to make sure that we've got enough cash to take us into 2018.
Is there any liability on behalf of the contractors that have carried out the work which has been ineffective?
The work at PG11A, it really wasn't the fault of any contractor. With well operations, these are difficult wells. They're high pressure, high temperature. They're deep, sort of 3,000 metres down. Things can go wrong, and the operator or the service company is only really liable whenever there's negligence on their part. We did get a discount of about €300,000 on PG10 because we were able to prove that some of the issues we faced there were as the result of something that the service company hadn't done properly. With PG11A, that isn't the case. This is just something that happens when you're working over wells of this sort, and the stock tool is just something that happens.
What are the planned remedial operations of each well, plus the expected time and cost to fix?
So remedial operations, I think with PG11A, there is work that could be done to isolate and identify where the water is coming from and block that off, and that could allow the well to produce more effectively. That's a very difficult thing to estimate the costs for, because we don't know exactly how much it's going to cost to clear the tubing of any obstructions. We've got this stuck tool. It could be that we got that out of the coil unit, which would be relatively inexpensive. It could be that we need to bring in a rig to do that. That is something that will be dealt with post-strategic review, and some of the companies that are in the data room looking at the information there will be factoring into their sort of development plans. On PG10, there's not really any remedial work to be done there. The well is producing as it should do. I think you could bring in a compressor to prolong the life of PG10. Again, there's a cost associated with that, and that's something that the companies in the strategic review might look at. Long term, the way to boost production from both wells will be to re-enter them and re-stimulate them, and that's what we need the permit for.
What was the reason and source of the water ingress?
On PG11A, we think the well may have fracked into a fault zone, and that's where the water could be coming from. Initially, whenever we were producing a lot of water, it was believed that this was frack water, which was being produced back, and once we'd allowed the well to flow for a period of time, it would clean up and it would produce dry gas. That hasn't been the case, so the water must be coming from the formation.
With regard to the gas supply to ENA, what is the minimum supply needed to avoid a penalty?
We restructured the ENA contract recently, and we extended the term by 6 months, and we also removed the minimum and the maximums under the contract. So it's we can produce whatever we can produce, and ENA will take it all. So there's no penalties anymore. And as part of that agreement as well, we got €200,000 back that we had been, that they had been holding as a bank guarantee. They still have 200,000 of our cash as a bank guarantee, but we got 200,000 back.
How is the water ingress being overcome if ENA was objected to soap stick?
The soap sticks were causing some foaming at the processing plant at Malden. If we're unable to use the soap sticks, we can still produce, but it just production isn't as effective. The soap sticks foam up the water and allow the well to lift the water more easily, so it means you can produce it for a longer period of time between these shut-ins to boost the pressure.
Is the country political situation making development more difficult, and are the Russians intervening?
I think, this question maybe is getting at, is sending the gas to Croatia hindering the project or helping it? And I think it's definitely increased the profile of the project within Slovenia. Firstly, to start producing after being in the country for 10 years, put the project on the map in a way it hadn't been before. And then to be selling all the production to Croatia raised questions from government ministers as to why aren't we selling this in Slovenia, to which I was very happy to explain to them that we've been trying to get a permit for 4 years and it's been delayed by the bureaucracy in Slovenia. So it's improved things, and it's a question that a lot of the government ministers in that have raised, and I think it helps put pressure on them.
Can we set a date for the conclusion of the review?
For the strategic review, it's not possible really to set a stop date. We're trying to bring it to a conclusion as quickly as possible, but you just have to keep talking to these people, keep developing term sheets and developing the negotiations until you come to a position where you can sort of bring it to a conclusion.
Are you happy with the constitution of the board?
Yes, this is a question that arises quite a lot, and the board provides a range of experience, a range of skills. We've got Nigel Moore, an ex-Ernst & Young partner, very strong on corporate governance and on the financial reporting. We've got Cameron Davies, who's been involved in the project, involved with the company a long time, on the technical side, the geologist is very experienced, and then we've got Clive with all his city experience. I think I'm very happy with the board.
Can you clarify the Henderson situation?
I mean, Henderson, I haven't been involved in the company for over, I think they sold, the last of the loan notes were converted over a year ago. So they have no involvement in the company, no shareholding. As far as I know, they're not above the threshold. They don't appear in our shareholder register, so they've no shareholding and they're not involved at all anymore.
And finally, so it's still your intention to go part-time?
Part-time, yes, as a cost-saving measure, really. The easiest or the best way to cut costs is to reduce the salaries that the board are taking, so we're doing that. By going part-time, it doesn't mean that I'm still going to be devoting as much time as is necessary to progressing the strategic review, keeping pressure to get the permits in Slovenia, and dealing with the sort of operational issues on the well. The fact is that we're no longer planning for looking at new assets or doing much in the way of future planning, because we're really focusing on the strategic review as being the way that the project is taken forward now.
Good, thank you very much. I think we'll open up to the floor for questions, please. Moderator.
Thank you. So if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and ensure that your line is unmuted locally. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. I will speak to you individually in order to retrieve your questions. There will then be a delay while this information is relayed to the hosts. Your questions will be answered in chronological order, time permitting. Okay, so we have a few questions in the queue, so please stand by for the first questions.
Okay. Hi. Okay, so we've had a couple of your questions. We'll start with question 1. With regards to the strategic review, would offers be made to shareholders?
And Clive, I think that's probably one for you to answer.
Yeah, Colin, thank you for that, and evening, everybody. I think the gist of the question there was, if there was more than one offer made by people who are interested in the movement, would more than one of the offers be put to shareholders? The answer to that would be no. What would happen is that the board, together with its advisors, would pick what was the best offer, what they deemed to be the best offer, and that offer then would be put to shareholders to vote on. And it would only be with the, if the shareholders voted to take it through, would that offer go through. In terms of the practicalities of the whole thing, to get to the point where we can actually put something in front of the shareholders, we've got to spend quite a lot of time with people on the other side, and inevitably they want to know that there is a degree of exclusivity in all of that. So the answer to the question is the board and its advisors would select what we thought was the best offer, was a recommendable offer, and then we would put it to shareholders, and then it's entirely up to shareholders whether shareholders approve it or not.
Okay. Following the strategic review, what would happen to the board of directors' options?
Depends on the price of the options. At the moment, I think the lowest exercise price of the options is somewhere around the sort of 1.5p level. The option scheme has its own rules. To the extent the directors remain with the business following the outcome of the strategic review and the price was above the strike price level, then everything would carry on as normal. If the price doesn't reach that level, then it's not applicable, and if directors leave the company, there are provisions in the option schemes to deal with that as well, with a relatively short notice and exercise period.
Okay. Have there been offers declined as they have been too low?
No, although some of the people that have made initial contact, I think we've regarded as people are very unlikely to come forward and offer anything that would be recommendable to shareholders, and as a result they probably haven't done the work in the data rooms and everything else that we need to do to be credible, but to date we've not turned anything away.
Okay, and last question for this period, is the company happy with WH Ireland as an advisor?
Yes, we are. I think they are particularly strong on their corporate finance side, and I think at the moment, using the skills of WH Ireland with the view to people coming on and then taking the company forward through the strategic review as a nominated advisor, that's very important. We're also using First Energy as part of the strategic review. And again, we've been happy, very happy with the performance of both those firms.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Rosie, moderator, can we open up again, please, for any further questions?
Right, next question. 40 million euros has already been spent on the project. Does the board think that it can generate returns to shareholders beyond that?
Okay, it's 50 million euros has been spent on the project now. And that number is important because until we've got the 50 million euros back, we're getting 90% of the revenue. So that that figure is important and makes the project more viable as a result of that.
Okay. With regards to the strategic review, you mentioned that 20 confidentiality agreements have been signed. How many parties are still interested?
Well, we've still got 20 signed. We still have a good number of parties that are still interested. As Clive alluded to there, some are further down the line and more serious than others. So there's a handful that I think have done significant amount of due diligence, and we've had some discussions or a number of discussions with. So I can't really put a number on it, but there's a handful, I think, that are serious. I don't know whether you'd add anything to that, Clive.
I think the only thing I'd add is that the data room that we've had and everyone's been able to go into once they signed the confidentiality undertakings is pretty comprehensive. So if you are still interested in having reviewed all that information, we would not expect people to come back with bona fide offers where they've got the funds or the ability to execute it, and then want to lock into another very lengthy period of due diligence. There really isn't very much that they haven't seen, and therefore, in terms of timing, I'm certainly of the view that we are much nearer the end of the process than the beginning. But I think, again, you can monitor how people operate in these data rooms, and I think the people that we are talking to, I'd certainly put in the very serious category, given the time and effort and the expense they've gone to assess the information we've put out there.
Okay. The tone of the recent RNS seemed downbeat, and long-term shareholders may have sold on the back of it. Why was this tone taken?
Clive, do you want to deal with that one?
Yeah, I'll do that. It was a factual announcement. I think if you go through it line by line, as we did, and we're very careful in terms of what we say for those reasons. At the time we put it out there, that we were struggling to get buy-in from the regulators in Slovenia, and I think it's only as a result of that that things move forward. It's actually prompted them and prodded them into action. But nothing in the announcement is anything that we wouldn't stand by in terms of being factual at the time, and had also not taken a much more positive approach to the discussions on the permitting, then we are on a bound as directors and making sure there's not a forced market to point out the facts. And the facts, I think, are that it's very clear, given what has been said over the last sort of 6 months, that shareholders really don't want to be diluted in terms of looking at other projects. I think Colin's reported on the performance of the wells, and they are still producing. But again, there will be a time at which they stop producing. We don't, as a board, have any capacity now to raise cash without going to all the time, trouble, and expense of convening EGMs. So in the absence of completing a satisfactory transaction under the strategic review, the position that was outlined would be the position. I think we are greatly encouraged by the positive attitude that ASO have taken following the review. They very much know they're in the spotlight. This is very much a public transaction now as far as the permits are concerned. Slovenia is very keen to get outside investment. We're one of the largest, if not the largest, investor so far. And I think public opinion over there, both in terms of the project, not wanting to rely on Russian gas, not wanting to be sending their gas over to Croatia, is very much on our side. And now that we've actually thrust it under the noses of ASO, I think they will respond in a sensible way which we've taken and we've announced would mean that we expect to get these permits by the end of the end of September. There's no guarantee on that. So I think that really highlights the position we're in. You know, we very much hope and expect to get a decent deal through the and a recommendable deal through the strategic review. But as directors of public companies, we are obliged to point out the consequences if that did not happen.
Okay, and last question before we take some more. Shareholders understand that you can't give an end date to the strategic review, but how much longer should the strategic review take?
I'll only go back to my previous answer. I think those that are involved in the project have had ample time to do their primary due diligence. I characterise it now that we're entering the commercial phase in terms of fine-tuning what they're looking to do and what we want. I would not expect, if we shook hands with someone on terms that we believe is recommendable, that they would have a particularly onerous further due diligence needs. So there isn't a date you can pick, but sooner rather than later, and I think we're certainly much nearer the end of the process than the beginning.
Okay. Thanks. I think we're going to try and take some more questions if there are questions out there.
Okay, next question. Can the board call an EGM to get authority to issue shares?
Clive, do you want to do that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy one. The answer is yes. The board's always got the option to do that. Obviously, it involves a little bit of expense and timing, but yeah, that's certainly within our powers. Clearly, then it's down to shareholders' votes, whether it gets approved or not. I would go back to Colin's comment, though, in terms of the cash that we've got, cash coming out of the wells. It's not something that I think we would need to look at in the immediate future. And certainly, I think, you know, we'd want to see how the strategic review pans out before actually going down that route. But yes, the board has that power.
Okay. Next question. Do GNERGO have a say in the strategic review?
The short answer to this one is no, not really. Just on this point, and I do get a lot of questions about GeoEnergo and GeoTerm, and sort of like just to make the distinction between the two companies. GeoEnergo is our partner in the project. They're the concession holder, and they have 25% of the project. They are in turn owned 50-50 by NAFTA Lendava and Petrol. Separately, there's a company called Petrol Geoterm. They're a service provider to the joint venture. It's Geoterm that has applied for the permits, their name on the permits. It's GeoEnergo who is the concession holder, so there's two separate companies there. GeoEnergo doesn't have any say in the strategic review. They're obviously very interested in the outcome of it, but they don't get any right to veto who may or may not get involved in the project, and they don't really it's not something they've asked for.
Yeah, next question. Considering third party involvement in the amendments, how confident is the board that these amendments will go through in a timely manner?
Yes, so there's one of the amendments that ARSHO have asked for to the IPPC permit that requires third party input. We've had meetings with them, and we are confident that they'll come back with the data that we need by the beginning of September. That's the feedback. And we've had regular meetings with these people, so yeah, we're confident. That was quite brief, but we'll see if Rosie's back with any more questions. Just while we're waiting for Rosie to collate the next set of questions, there is one of these other ones that I don't think I've quite answered so far on the permitting. One of the pre-submitted questions was, what actions have our strategic partner taken considering the permits are issued in their name? Have they in any way contributed to the delays, and if so, have you challenged them? So this goes back to the point I just mentioned about the confusion between GeoEnergo and GeoTerm. So GeoTerm is the ones that applied for the permits, and have they in any way contributed to the delays? No, is the short answer. I don't think they have. The way that the amendment process is dealt with is whenever ARSO write back to us with the amendment request, it goes to the consultant who's managing and leading the process on behalf of the joint venture. She goes through the amendment, and then she will liaise with either Geotherm or with Ascent, or will request that we get third parties involved where ARSO have requested studies or anything of a more detailed technical nature. So Geotherm haven't contributed to the delays. They're as keen as anyone to get these permits issued. We are Geotherm's biggest customer by a long way, and basically they'll make a lot more money once there's more gas being produced and once the new processing plant is built. So they're as motivated as Ascent are, and certainly Geo and Ergo's as motivated as we are to get to the next phase of the project.
Okay, first question. Do we know whether the department dealing with the request is the same department for both permits?
Yes. Short answer is yes. So the permits are all being dealt with by ARSA, which is the Environment Agency and sits within the Environment Ministry in Slovenia. Now, there are different case officers who are doing the detailed work on each of these requests, which is why things happen at a slightly different time. But it's all within the same department, and it's the same manager that is sitting above these officials and is communicating with us about it.
Okay, next question. With regard to interested parties, is this something that can be put out in an RNS?
Clive, that's probably more for you.
Yeah, one for me. I think we've announced where we are with the strategic review. Clearly, if there's a fundamental change and step forward, then we're obliged to say something. I think, though, continuing announcing where we are actually undermines the day-to-day negotiations with the other side, because there is a danger that you can look a bit desperate in these things. So I think, it's not something we're going to be updating on a day-by-day basis. But when we have news and when there is something to say, it will definitely be said.
Okay. And last question for the moment. Can the board of directors purchase shares?
The short answer to that one is no, not at the moment, as I think we're in a closed period by virtue of the strategic review. It would be a bit, it wouldn't be proper. So, Clive, I don't know whether you want to add on that one, but I think it's...
Yeah, but the rules are very clear. You're either in an open period or a closed period. We're in a closed period because of the strategic review, and also as we get closer to the interim results, not quite yet, but I think it's very clear on the strategic review, it would be wrong for us to, with our extra knowledge, to be dealing in the market at the minute.
Yeah, okay.
I was just going to summarise where we were. I mean, I think it's been very gratifying given the number of people that have spent time to join this call. I think what I would say is that I would be very surprised and disappointed if we're not in relatively short order able to put something in front of shareholders that the board would recommend as a way forward as a result of the strategic review, given the level of interest that remains. Clearly, there's no guarantee that's going to happen, but certainly that would be my personal view, that I would be surprised and disappointed if we can't put something in front of you to consider, and then it's really down to shareholders whether that's the route they fancy going.
Very good. Yes, I think we've answered, hopefully we've answered all the questions that have come through. Any further questions, I'm always available via email, and hopefully, as Clive said, we'll have detailed updates on the strategic review once we're in a position to do so. So just thank everyone again for the time spent this evening on the call, and look forward to updating shareholders further in due course. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's conference. You may now replace your handsets.